Welcome to Grad Chat by PhD Balance, where we talk about topics of grad school beyond the academic research and that may be a bit more difficult to talk about in our day-to-day life. I'm your host, Linda Corcoran, and I'm currently a grad student in University College Cork. And for PhD Balance, I am the Grad Chat lead and a Twitter coordinator. If you like what you see here, make sure to check out the PhD Balance YouTube channel for more Grad Chats and Anchor FM for the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe for notifications about when we go live. Our topic today is creating a medium to normalize grad school experiences. And I'm very excited to welcome our guest, Monica Molinaro. Monica just defended her PhD on Thursday. Big congratulations. And through her dissertation research examining the caregiving narratives of pediatric oncology nurses, Monica came to understand the importance of stories, not just in caregiving, though, but also for grad students. And due to this, she has started two podcasts. First, the Grad Life podcast on Gradcast, and her own podcast, Humans of Grad School. So welcome, Monica. We're so pleased to have you here to discuss your experiences.
Oh, thank you so much. That was such a wonderful welcome.
Thank you. Do you want to maybe expand on anything that I said?
I mean, I think that was a beautiful introduction. I think, yes, I defended my dissertation on Thursday. So I'm a very newly minted ceremonial PhD at this point. And yeah, my research was focused on narratives or stories. And as I've progressed throughout my PhD, I've come to learn and understand how important stories are in a multitude of different ways. And so I'm excited to talk to you about it today, maybe even share some stories myself, who knows? But yeah, that's kind of how everything has happened.
Awesome. So I guess to start, you have founded two podcasts on top of your grad school research. How have you found time to do that? Because grad school can be busy on its own.
Yes. So the first podcast that I did, the hashtag Grad Life series, I joined a committee here at school. So at Western University in London, Ontario, Canada. And we had a podcast already for our Society of Graduate Students, and it was known as Gradcast. And I thought it was super interesting to be able to not only, you know, disseminate and share research in a highly accessible format, but just to be able to have a conversation on a different medium, because oftentimes I think there's a lot of pressure and emphasis on publications and conference presentations. And when I saw that there's a new medium for doing so, especially for someone like me who does listen to podcasts, I thought it was super interesting. So I went and joined that committee. And after I spent some time on that committee, I started thinking, it's really great that students are here and they're able to talk about their research and share their research in some capacity. But I started thinking, what if we just talked about grad school in general? We all come from different disciplines and we all do a vast range of research, but there's a lot of experiences that I think that we've all been through at some point or another in graduate school. And so I figured, what if we just started a series? It didn't have to be anything that was weekly or super rigorous in any capacity, but just something that we could sit down and talk about topics that were relevant to individuals in grad school. And that's how Grad Life came to fruition. Eventually, I think I ran Grad Life probably for about a year to a year and a half. And in that time, we talked about what it's like managing finances as a grad student, or navigating feelings of imposter syndrome, or what are we supposed to do with our lives after getting a PhD? Because we've only ever heard academia or industry, and half of us don't even know what industry means to begin with. And so those episodes were extremely fun to put together and to talk with our guests about and to just share experiences with everyone. And it seemed like other students really related to the topics too. So I was really grateful for that. Eventually I had to stop podcasting there just because at that point, my dissertation, I had about a year left and I was really rounding up and also trying to figure out my future after my PhD. But also in that time, as I was getting more involved in my research and really into the depth and richness of my research, I started thinking, well, graduate students, when it comes to identity, you know, graduate student is not the be-all end-all identity that we have. We're grad students, but we're very multifaceted people. We have lives outside of academia and our studies. And who are these people? And what do we do in our spare time? And what are our hobbies? And who do we care about? And what do we do? And so that's how my idea for Humans of Grad School started. And I capitalized essentially on the expertise that I developed using narrative methodologies and narrative interviewing to just talk to people and ask them to tell me their stories about being a person that just happened to be in grad school. How did you get here? What did you want to be when you grew up? Did you expect to be here at all? And how is that going for you? And it was a really nice experience. I'm going to call it the first season, I think is what I'll call it, back in March, because at that point I was really in the thick of finishing my dissertation, and ultimately my dissertation came first. But in terms of managing the time of that, I'm not going to lie, there were definitely some nights that I spent just editing podcasts and creating social media content and things like that. And sometimes the time definitely got the better of me. But overall, I tried to balance it as best as I could, set up a schedule where I knew I was only publishing things every 2 weeks or twice a month or something of the sort. It's so weird when I think about, like, how did you manage it? Because if I look back and think of it, it's just like, I just did. It just happened. It all came together in some way. It's so weird to think about like that.
I 100% get that. I think as a person who very much oversubscribes her time, I very much just pack it full of everything. And it's just like, I make it work. It just happens. but I'm so glad that you brought in so many points that you covered in both of the podcasts, but seeing grad students as humans and not just grad students is so important, because academia has a habit of just pretending that we exist in the lab or we exist at our computer in a library, and then there's nothing else. We're not allowed to be anything else. But I guess, do you want to talk a bit more about your individual journey in grad school?
I was someone who did all of my degrees back to back to back. I didn't take any breaks in between or anything of the sort. It was back in undergrad. At first, I wasn't fully sure. I was someone who went into undergrad and was like, I'm going to medical school. I'm going to become a physician. And that is the end of it. And literally my first day of class in my first year of undergrad, I was taking a chemistry course, and there were about 400 of us in this lecture hall at the time. And the prof looked around the room and said, how many of you plan on going to medical school? And almost every single person in the class raised their hand. And then the prof said, how many of you have a plan B? And I think maybe 5 people raised their hand there. And that for me was kind of a wake-up call, just as, you know, maybe I was a little bit unaware of how difficult it is to get into medical school. And maybe it should be something that I need to consider having multiple plans for. And so as I progressed in my undergrad, I ended up securing myself a 4th year undergraduate thesis. And with a prof that I loved, and I was a teaching assistant for her, and she was a wonderful person, mentor, human being. But my work at the time was actually in parasitology. So I was examining nematodes, which are little parasitic worms that you can only look at under a microscope. And the purpose of the project was to see if we could potentially discover a new species of nematode that was potentially related to C. elegans. It's called Canorhabditis elegans, which is a specific species of nematode that is typically used in a lot of parasitology research. And as I was doing that work, I was like, I really like doing research. There's something really fun about this. There's something really nice about being able to go to the lab and seeing how things progress and being able to chat with my friends. I was in a shared lab with a couple of other students, some of who I'm still friends with today, like many, many years later. But simultaneously, I was also volunteering at what's called the Ronald McDonald House here in Canada that helps children and their families who are having lengthy stays at hospital. And in this case, I was volunteering there one night, and a little girl and her mom came in. And this little girl, she's probably about 5 or 6 years old. She came in, she was completely bald. And she had a long scar just running down her scalp because she had been treated for a brain tumor about 6 weeks before. And mom said hi to me and they just walked in and I didn't think anything of it. I was, my job as a volunteer there was simply just to help make everybody comfortable, make coffee for the parents. If they needed laundry done, we could do laundry, clean things up, keep things tidy, just things like that. And I directed mom to the kitchen. And once again, I wasn't thinking very much of it, but I loved it when the kids came in. I was like, oh my God, maybe I can like play with some of these kids just as something fun to do. And this little girl just asked me like, oh, can you help me onto the couch? But like, just help me, because she was so tiny, just to help her onto the couch. And we talked about, she was wearing this pink sparkly robe that she had just gotten. She was so excited about it. We talked about her robe and she asked if she could have a snack and if she could watch TV. And we were just chatting. It was just me and this little like 5-year-old just having a chat. And what I didn't realize was as her and I were talking, her mom had come back from the kitchen and was standing behind us and just watching us talk. And when I turned around, I saw mom, and mom was standing there fully crying, just tears streaming down her face. And right away for me, I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened. We were just talking. Are you okay? Did something, what happened? And eventually mom had told me, you know, they had been in the hospital for 6 weeks and her daughter refused to speak to anyone that wasn't a family member. And I was the first person she had spoken to in 6 weeks. And that for me was like this, oh my God, kind of like, I couldn't believe it had happened. And that's kind of what motivated me to get into pediatric oncology research. At that point, it was a very big step forward in motivating me to do research in that field, to think that I could potentially do something in that field that could be helpful. And from there, you know, I ended up applying to master's programs, thinking that I could do research in that field. And I did. I did my master's examining pediatric cancer, late effects of pediatric cancer in young adults that had cancer as children. And I did work on that. And then I moved into my PhD and started studying, you know, the caregiving stories of pediatric oncology nurses. And that's just kind of how I ended up here. And all between that, I try to maintain identity as a human, and not just a grad student throughout that time and taking on different hobbies and interests. So unfortunately, I can't do any of these still because of the way the pandemic is and for safety reasons. You know, I used to go to spin class very often and I was in a competitive axe throwing league, and which sounds like very weird when I say it, but it was very fun and very enjoyable. And I actually have my own axe now because I was very involved in the league at that point, and going to trivia with friends and being a part of different committees. And, you know, some of these things still haven't been able to resume, unfortunately, because of the pandemic. So there's been a bit of a shift in that regard in terms of being able to maintain your identity as a human outside of graduate school. I think there's been a lot of difficulty associated with that over the last year and a half, just because things have had to shut down for safety reasons. But, you know, I do think it's important, like, and I understand that there's a lot of factors that are involved, cost and finances in terms of working. On top of doing my dissertation and trying to be involved, I worked multiple research assistant jobs so that I could make some additional money on the side and get myself a little bit of extra research experience. And I think that's a pretty common experience for a lot of students, or being a teaching assistant in some capacity, and doing other work at the university. So it's just like, You know, as I sit back and think about it, I'm like, wow, it's been a very busy 7 years in graduate school. There's been a lot that has happened in that time. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an amazing journey just to like go through it all. Mm-hmm. Even though you're talking about 7 years, like you started and ended up in a completely different place, which I think a lot of people do in grad school. They end up in places they never imagined that they would. And if you have the ability to take on these research jobs and these teaching assistant jobs, you can find that you love things that you never thought you would. Like, I absolutely love teaching and I didn't think I would love it. And it can put you into, some people have decided from that to go into teaching only, or to, a lot of people have discovered they love science communication and that's what they want to do with their lives. And it's great when they get to do that. And it's fantastic. But I definitely think your point of the pandemic has sort of, I guess, eroded the work-life balance that a lot of people had beforehand, mm-hmm. even if it was just some semblance of it, because you're sitting there and your guilt, your, I guess, academic perception of laziness is just like, oh, but look at your computer. Why are you sitting here watching TV? Why are you, mm-hmm. I don't know, going for a walk? You should be working.
Oh, and I used to struggle with that constantly. At the beginning of my PhD, I was that person that worked 7 days a week and 12 hours a day. And it didn't take, it was in my first year of my PhD. It was during reading week here. So that's usually in about February, like halfway through the second term. And I had gone home for a couple of days. Graduate students don't necessarily get it off, but it's just, I didn't have any classes in that period of time. And I came home and was like, I'm just going to relax a bit. And I don't remember the last time I was that severely sick. My body had just, I had developed an extremely bad stomach flu, and it was just because I had spent so much time just going and going and going and not taking a break and not resting and not doing anything of the sort, that finally, when I was like, I am able to take a break, my body was just like, okay, we don't really have to protect you because you're finally taking a break now. And it just hit me extremely hard. And I remember after that being like, this is not sustainable. I cannot keep doing this to myself. I cannot keep working myself into the ground to the point where I get that sick, because I was sick, I think, for over a week at that point. And it was just, it was debilitating how sick I was. It was awful. And so, you know, I definitely still struggled with it after that. It's not like that was this pinnacle turning point moment where all of a sudden I was like, I have boundaries now. Like, that's not how it went whatsoever. There were still many weekends where I spent my time working, but I remember thinking I can't go to the extent that I was at the beginning, but I was still working weekends. I was still, you know, I can admit, I still remember hearing people say like, oh, I didn't work this weekend, or I didn't do anything this weekend. In my head, I went, what do you mean you didn't do anything this weekend? How do you expect to be successful if you're not working on the weekends? Like, I had that attitude too. I remember internalizing that attitude at the beginning of my PhD. And then the pandemic hit. And I remember thinking, I don't know how this moment manifested. I have no idea if it was even a moment or just something that happened over a prolonged period of time. But at some point or another, I just remember thinking, my work is never going to love me back. Like, my work is never going to tell me that they love me. My work is never going to fulfill me in a multitude of personal capacities. My work isn't going to support me the same way that my friends and my family are going to support me. And yes, we are all working from home now, and that guilt feels awful because you're constantly in front of your computer, or you have access to your work now because you're working from home and there's no boundary in that space. So you feel compelled to work even more. But at some point or another, and I think it was also through multiple conversations with my therapist, because I knew that I was burning out again as well, that it was just like, your work is not going to love you back, and you have to be a human being outside of grad school. What are you going to do? And part of that, at least for me, and I think it's an experience that a lot of grad students have, where a lot of your self-worth is tied into your work and what you're doing and external validation from others about your research and your publications and your work and your awards and things like that. And, you know, I think it took some time and reflection and a little bit more self-awareness, and at least for me, conversations with my therapist as well, to be like, I'm a full and whole and kind and nice and living human being outside of my work and outside of my graduate school. And people don't love me for the research that I do. People love me for a whole host of other reasons. And that's, I am that human being that people like and people love. And if I dedicate my entire life to just that work, there's a whole other side of me that I'm completely neglecting in some capacity. And so, you know, leading up to the end of my dissertation, once again, there were still weekends that I had to work. It was just a very busy time. But over that period of time during the pandemic, for me, it was like, you know what? If I don't set these boundaries now, I'm never going to set these boundaries. And I'm just going to work myself into a cycle of just completely burning myself out. And so I've hit this point now where I don't work weekends at all. Do not touch them. I've spent time navigating what works for me. I'm someone that gets up very early in the morning, and that's when my best writing happens. So I get up and I do my writing and then take on different tasks in the afternoon. So it's taken a lot of getting, and I think grad school is a little bit conducive to that. You spend a lot of time getting to know yourself, especially within the pandemic. You spend a lot of time really getting to know and understand yourself because you're not busy anymore. So all you can do is spend time with yourself at that point. And so navigating all of that has been very interesting. And by all means, I'm nowhere near perfect. I don't mean to preach or anything of the sort about this. It's just, this is kind of where I've ended up. And I genuinely hope that I can maintain this moving forward and having those boundaries and having the understanding that I am a whole person outside of my identity as a graduate student and the work that I do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was just like nodding the entire time you were speaking, because I'm like, this is what I'm aiming for. I'm trying my best to have it. And it was also during the week, I was reading a book about the perception of laziness I was just like, it touched on a lot of the points that you were also touching on. So this entire week, I've just been thinking about a lot of it.
Yeah. And it's so interesting, right? Like a lot of us aren't lazy when for some reason rest has been associated with laziness. But, and once again, it's the same thing. It's taken a lot of time to understand that rest is conducive and necessary for producing good work. And not that we should be centering what we're doing solely around producing good work, but if that's what helps us think about or helps us feel less guilty about taking those breaks, then that's the mindset that needs to be have. But it's always so interesting, like, oh, you're taking your weekends off. Like, how lazy of you. There's boundaries that need to be set for yourself mentally, emotionally, physically. You can't produce or act or be your best if you're constantly throwing yourself into your work.
Absolutely. And it's very much the way that academia has set up and has thrived on it. And it's feeding people's work into their self-worth, into their perception of laziness or fear of being considered lazy, their fear of failure, and thrives on this imposter syndrome, on the having most people feel like they don't belong because they're constantly working to try to. And it's all kind of just wrapped up in a big bow of dysfunction.
Oh, 100%.
Sorry. But yeah, this is, and I guess potentially is something that you would find in the podcast as well. I always find that speaking to people helps you really reflect on the way that you approach grad school and that you approach your work. And when you hear people who do strive for this balance, who ensure that they get this separation of work and home and work and them as a person, you sometimes reflect on how dysfunctional your own relationship has been.
Oh, 100%. There is a question that I help produce another podcast here at the university. And one of the questions that often get asked is, how would you describe yourself if you didn't describe your research? or your relationship to your research? And there's a lot of people that that question stumps, because so many of us have our identity so inextricably bound to our work that it's hard to think of ourselves as a person outside of the work that we're doing and outside of our identities as graduate students. And so hearing those perspectives has definitely been helpful for me. But I do feel as though as time is progressing, there is a shift that is coming, or that at least I'm hoping for. Maybe I'm just being very optimistic in this moment, but I truly do feel as though graduate students are very much so developing an awareness that, you know, this isn't the be all end all of my life. It is something that is very clearly important to all of us and why we're here. But at the same time, we are still very much so rich and multifaceted persons outside of our graduate school experiences.
Absolutely. It's I think it's definitely growing, and in part that is due to people more so sharing this, even just the hidden curriculum of grad school that we all have to try and figure out, and people sharing their also their failures and things that have gone wrong. And I especially find Twitter is great for that. And the more and more people that discover academic Twitter and discover community, the better, the more that they consider themselves more than just their research. And that doesn't mean that you don't love your research, because you're absolutely allowed to. And everyone, or most people, tend to love their research. We wouldn't be doing it if we didn't. But you are allowed to exist as a person outside that.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I feel the sharing of rejections, or what some might consider, you know, failures or losses in some capacity, is so important, because obviously social media is also a medium where people present particular selves. And usually those selves are their best selves or their most accomplished selves. And so being able to witness, you know, like a rejection collection in some capacity online is just so refreshing to see. And we've all been through it, and we've all stumbled through our rejections. And I know that I've definitely been rejected and had, you know, not so kind reviews of my work at different times. And it's something that we all experience. But just because you experience a rejection doesn't mean that you're not successful in some capacity. A rejection is always a step forward. A rejection is always, and it sucks at the time when you get those rejections. They are heartbreaking at times. And of course, once again, if your self-worth is tied into your work and then you get a rejection, how could you not internalize that in some capacity and feel poorly about yourself? We've all had those moments. I've spent hours crying about papers that have been rejected, or applications for scholarships that have been rejected in some capacity. And it's really hard. You know, is there a be all end all solution to this? I truly don't know. But I think that the more open we are to sharing our rejections, no matter how successful or unknown or new that we are to the experience, I think it makes the culture a lot less daunting, and hopefully at least a little bit easier to navigate at times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so important to not just show your full self in that, your failure, successes, your, I guess, mediums also, where you expected either something fabulous or terrible to happen and then it didn't. They're awesome to share as well. But it's also about bringing your full self to work and being allowed to also leave and have your self separate from your research go home. And exactly. That's a confusing statement, but academia has thrived on white people and excluding everyone else. And I understand that I'm also a white person, but being allowed to bring yourself other than your research, other than people saying, oh, well, you know, your classmates have published 5 papers, 2 papers, and you've published 1, you're a failure. That attitude is terrible.
Oh, 100%. And it's important to think about the construction of academia in the history of academia, which is a very predominantly white space founded on colonialism and white supremacy. And so to think about that and the privileges that we've potentially been afforded or that we have been afforded by being white women in this space is something that is necessary to consider moving forward. And so, and to think about how can this space be changed? How can this space be broken down and built into something new and better? And what about this culture? Who is this culture and who are these attitudes serving? Who has power in these institutions and within these contexts? Why do they have power? And what does that power give them over other groups of people? All of these things are extremely important to consider when you're a person navigating academia, because it's very apparent that certain individuals and groups of people are afforded much more than others in this system.
Absolutely. And it's very much that, yes, everyone needs to try and form these boundaries for themselves, but we also need to tackle the culture, because as white people, we are afforded much more, let's say, rope when we are creating boundaries than other minorities, other races would be allowed, because they would be called lazy and undedicated much faster than we would.
Oh, 100%. I remember the other day I was sitting and I was reading a paper about the discourse of professionalism and what it means to be considered a professional, and including in spaces like academia, you know what I mean? And once again, you sit there and you need to think about, what does the discourse of professionalism, who does the discourse of professionalism serve? What archetypes are involved in the discourse of professionalism, and who are those archetypes based on, right? And then from there, thinking about the rules that are associated with professionalism or different kinds of etiquette or whatever it may be that are associated with professionalism, who are those rules intended for? What is the purpose of these rules and regulations that are surrounding this discourse? And I think it's just, and I can admit, when I started my PhD, coming especially from a science background, I was someone that was not thinking big picture. I was very narrow in my focus and I took a lot of things literally, the way I was like reading and writing and doing everything of the sort, and spending time doing research that's very much founded both in the social sciences and the humanities and the health sciences, and being able to do that interdisciplinary work, I think was so helpful to understand that we don't exist in a vacuum. Like, this is not just a little box and nothing happens in this box. Things are just as they are in this box. Context and nuance is incredibly important when you can make any decision or consider the lives of anyone in this institution. And they're just necessary. They're necessary. It's very difficult, I think, at this point in time to be able to exist or think so linearly without considering context now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, it's very much, I still get a lot of pushback from people that say, you know, oh, science doesn't know anything about marginalization. And it's like, yes, it does. It's the entire history of it. You cannot leave everything at the door. You have to bring that context, because, and it only makes science better. It only makes your research better, and it only makes you question everything. Like, academia was built on questioning everything. Or, well, most things, but we need to question everything to ensure that we're doing things properly. And normalizing experiences, everybody's experiences, only helps us fulfill a richer context, a better research, better academia. And we have been talking for so long. This time goes so fast every time I'm on Grad Chat, but we are nearly out of time. And is there anything else you'd like to touch on before we finish up?
Ooh, that's a good question. I can't think of anything in particular. I think it's just, I realize that, you know, I've approached this from a particular way that I've been able to do things, or that I've been able to progress through my graduate studies. And I understand that that's not the experience for everyone whatsoever. I'm speaking from a particularly located point of view as a white woman in academia. But, you know, I think my hope and once again, I said I have an optimism about this moving forward, is that there's going to be some changes in structures, in mentalities, in attitudes, and in assumptions in the way that academia is at this point in time. So at this point, I think I would just say, you know, I'm really optimistic and I'm really hopeful that things can change moving forward.
That is so awesome. I think that's a great note to end on. So this has been Grad Chat by PhD Balance. We go live Saturdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific. Episodes are posted on our podcast and hosted on Anchor FM on Tuesdays, and they are available on pretty much all major streaming platforms. Until next time.